You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, August 5th, 2009. This is episode 90, Run MDMC. Welcome back to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. I'm Martin Spriggs, Wells Chief Technology Officer, and I have two lovely ladies with me this morning. As usual, Sally Draper from Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Welcome to August.
Good to be in August, although yes. I would love for it to warm up a little bit. We were just talking about that in our pre-show conversation. And we also have with us Gail Potratz from up north. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, everybody.
Did you know you were up north?
Oh, yeah. I hear that a lot.
Okay, you're up north from me, I suppose. Actually, you're probably south of Sally, I assume.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, probably.
And how are both of you this morning?
I'm doing great. I'm re-energized after an exciting week of participating in the conference. When you do something like that, you always come home with a lot of great ideas and just a lot of energy after being with like-minded people, I guess.
Yeah, you were down south, as it were, in Milwaukee.
Yes, farther south than you even, Martin.
That's right. And in deference to you, Sally, who was really from the South, Gail, you were here in Milwaukee for a conference, the Milwaukee Digital Media Conference, MDMC. Sounds like
right.
A rap group, doesn't it?
Yeah. This was actually MDMC 09.
Okay.
This is the third year the conference has been held, and it was held at the Milwaukee County Zoo. So it was an exciting week at the zoo.
So how many times have you attended this in the past, I assume?
Yes, I attended the first one in 07, which was held at the museum, Milwaukee Museum. And then last year we were at the zoo. And both those years I was a participant, and then this year I was asked to be one of the instructors. So I was participating from a little different angle this year, but most enjoyable the same.
As our loyal listeners know, whenever we have Gail on, we try and focus on technology that is specific to the classroom, and that's what we're going to do today as we talk through your experiences there, Gail, at MDMC, and how that might apply or what some takeaways might have been for especially our teacher listeners. So first of all, is there a theme for every conference, and if so, what was the theme for this year?
Yes, our theme this year was Educators Avoiding Extinction. And the project, and pun is intended, each group had an animal that is housed at the zoo that was an endangered animal, and their job for the week was to research that animal. We used the typical research internet tools to research, and also we used some Skype calls to experts, and also on-site interviews with some of the animal keepers at the zoo, and each of the groups got to be a so-called expert on their one particular animal and then produce something to share their knowledge with the world, not just the people there, but the whole world. So, yes, the pun intended is, of course, the focus of the conference is to be able to use technology in an authentic learning situation. And the biggest takeaway, I guess, is that the teachers get to experience what it's like to participate in a huge project-based learning activity, an authentic learning activity like this. And the idea is that they are better equipped then to create similar experiences for their students. Not necessarily on quite as big a scale, but if you have the opportunity to do so, it could be at a local facility or someplace where you're actually on site doing some of this rather than in a classroom. So
your teachers basically got to be students, and the tools that they were using for research, like you said, were some of the typical tools that, making use of technology. But what I was excited about was the output of the project was very audio-video based. So they were learning, obviously, about some new technology with audio-video as well.
Right. When we finished up last year, the biggest comment from the participants last year was, we need to know how to do more video. And so this year, when we planned the activities that we were going to be doing for last week, we included a production of a video as part of the project. And so actually this was what was done. After they did their research on their animal, the project that they put together was, first of all, they produced a video either with Movie Maker or iMovie. And then that video was imported into a VoiceThread project. And VoiceThread is another 2.0 tool that's out there. And we've talked about it long ago on the show. I don't know how many people are familiar with that, but it's a wonderful tool. It's a social tool like most 2.0 applications are. And the social part of it comes in when you have imported your movie into this tool, and then people go to the site and look at your VoiceThread with your movie in. It doesn't have to be a movie. It can just be a picture. You can do lots of things with VoiceThread. But they look at this, and then the social component is they can click on a tab there, a button there, and they can comment on your work. They can comment by text, typing. They can do an audio. They can call in with their phone to the site and get it on there. But then when you're done, all around the edges of your VoiceThread, you have all these little boxes with either people's picture or whatever icon they choose to represent themselves. And you click on them, and you can hear the people comment on your work. And so there's some, that's the social component to it. And you can just, for you teachers out there, you can just, your wheels are already turning, I can tell, thinking of all the different ways you could have kids do things here and have students comment, parents comment. You could do a little movie of your activities of the day or a field trip and get it on there and have parents look at it and comment. You can do a book report on here. It's endless. I mean, there's wikis devoted to VoiceThread activities. It was the number one teacher 2.0 tool in this last year. And then
I liked, so you've got a couple of layers already. You've made a movie, right. You've put it in VoiceThread, and then you need a way to tie together all the projects and wrap it up so people can find it. And you added one more layer to that, and that was a Google map with all the different animals spread across the globe from their, you know, original habitats or whatever.
Right.
And you could click from there to find out about each of the different projects. So I thought it was a really neat way to tie it all together with a Google map.
Right, and actually then once you do that, now you're out there for the world. I mean, our hope is to have this information about these animals and what can be done to prevent their extinction and all of that is out there. It'd be so neat if other kids from other schools or anybody across the world would look at those and make comments on those, because you can always go back either to VoiceThread or to Google Map and look at those projects and talk about collaboration in a worldwide sense, a global sense, which was kind of one of our goals, to tie it all together in a global sense. So
Gail, which project was yours? Did you have a particular, I assume you participated.
Right. Well, no, I didn't do an animal. I was an instructor, so I didn't do one particular project. I did the Google Map part as far as the teaching. That was my little, piece of the puzzle as far as teaching the whole project.
Okay.
So I had the last part to tie it all together for people. But I did have two people from my school that attended this year, and they did the Siberian tiger. that was theirs. And I was so happy that they were there, and I'm hoping that we'll have a few more. I think they'll come back next year. Next year we will not be meeting at the zoo. We'll be meeting at the public museum in Milwaukee. So that it won't just be about art. I was a little, I'm not an art person, and so when we first talked about that, I was like, oh boy, I don't know. It's not my area. But I'd be willing to learn, because I don't know that much about art, but it is not going to be totally about art. So it'll be a very all-encompassing project once again, but it offers some neat opportunities. For our fun day this year, we went, one of the nights we were there, we went to the Brewer game, and it was the one that they won, so it was good.
The one that they won.
Yeah, the one that week they won. So
can I just circle back, Gail, and ask you said you use two different movie making softwares, Movie Maker, right, and iMovie. Are those both Mac applications, or is there a Windows app there?
Movie Maker is the PC side, and iMovie, okay, is the Mac side. Right. And iMovie has several versions right now. We're having a painful switch from 06, which most people like using with kids, to an 09 version. So we had a couple different versions of that, and that got a little sticky for a while there, because the new version, not too many people knew, and yet we were trying to use that one. So we made it through.
Sounds like real life in the yeah, technology setting in a school. You're destined,
exactly,
to run into some of those kind of obstacles. So it was probably good that you, yeah, got to work through that.
So how would,
exactly,
Gail, how would this work then in a classroom setting if they were to, let's say, embark on a project like this? Would this be a quarter-long or a semester-long project? Would this be based on a, you know, would it be in a classroom setting, let's say in a science class per se, that this would, this, mm-hmm, would be the lesson? How would a teacher in one of our Wells schools implement something like this?
Well, if you wanted to do the exact same thing, yeah, I think it would fit into the science area probably most easily. Although when you're writing a script for a movie, it's a lot of language arts.
Right,
so,
right.
Look, most all of these project-based things, your standards are going to be cross-curricular.
You're crossing,
and that's
right,
the, yeah, that's the beautiful thing about it, you know. Just by chance, yesterday when I was pulling this out to look at it, the quote of the day on my PageFlakes page on my homepage was from Confucius, and it said, "What I hear, I forget. What I see, I remember. What I do, I understand."
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point of this is, you know, we can sit up in the front and tell kids all the things we think are the most important things for them to remember, but they're not going to remember all that much. If you add some pictures and they see it, it'll be better. But, you know, when they're doing things hands-on, we all know that's the way the best learning occurs. And so these kinds of projects aid that. I would do this in a science class. You might not be able to go to a zoo, depending on where you live.
Mm-hmm.
There are virtual zoos online, so you might be able to substitute there. You could actually do the rest of this project. We Skyped experts. We had to, of course, find our experts and prepare them, get them ready for what we were doing. And one of them was my son-in-law that I hooked into it. So your experts aren't necessarily... how should I say? You don't have to feel that you have to have the really
world-renowned, right?
Yeah, yes, right. But just the point of getting people to use Skype and the tools you used, how easy it is to connect with somebody else that might know more than you do about the subject.
Okay.
And you can do that in school.
I was just going to make a comment along the lines of quarter-long or semester-long projects. What, with my experience, and Gail, I don't know about you, but kids don't have patience for that long a project. They don't want to wait to make the movie till 6 weeks from now. They want to be doing it right away and producing things. And so,
right,
I think give them the tools and let them do more short-term projects and maybe tie all that into a long-term project. But to stretch things out doesn't really go along with the get it done kind of attitude that kids have these days. So,
right, and I think that kind of is depending on, you know, your project and how you do it and the grade level of your kids. I think upper graders could actually do this. We did it in a week. They could probably do it in, well, it depends on how much previous experience they've had, you know. But 2 weeks, I think they could do this in 2 weeks. Most teachers get very nervous when you talk about two long-term projects because they think they're missing a whole bunch of other stuff they should be teaching. And there again, there's concessions that are made when you realize how many subject areas you're really including here. So if you skip literature while you're doing this, is that really so bad? Because you're doing a lot of literature, you know, language arts standards as you're building this media. And that's something we all, that's a discussion we all need to have. Mm-hmm. You know, our faculty just had that discussion a couple weeks ago when we got together in the middle of summer. And some parents need to be on school boards and whatever, because if you really shift your paradigm to do a lot of this, school's done differently than it used to be, and that's a good thing.
Well, I would imagine there's got to be an un- or de-siloing of the educational experience when you bring in technology, and as it crosses disciplines, as you mentioned, that really increases the demand on coordination amongst faculty. And you have to intentionalize that. You just can't, it's not the same old thing, you know, that you've done in previous years. It can't be.
Right, right. And that is a very hard thing to do. And to make it work right, you'd like to have everybody, the whole faculty on board and understanding and having a desire to go that way. And that's not always the case.
Right.
So you just work at it as you can.
And so and it's not that technology is driving it, but it, but the tools, the 21st century tools that our children really need to understand
right.
and use, somewhat demand it.
Yes, it's not about the technology. That's the whole thing. It's we use the technology, but technology is still just the tool, and we're training, it's what we're training our kids for in the next century. We're teaching school. If we're still having the kids sit in rows and the teachers up in the front every, you know, either teacher presentation or lecture all day, we're teaching like we used to teach to kids back when they got out jobs in the industrial world. Mm-hmm. And that worked. But we're not teaching kids who are going to be in that same industrial world when they're employed. Their world is going to be a whole lot different. Oh, there's just a ton of good videos on that. GE just came out with the five top areas of employment in the next 50 years. One is going to be jobs involved with water, energy, biosciences, two more that I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And the video shows, you know, here's the old-fashioned school, and you're training them to be standing in a line, an assembly line, working, mm-hmm. and really they're going to be looking at a whole bunch of different, you know, surrounding computer screens and trying to figure out how to design things, create things, solve problems. We just have to train our kids for what's coming. A lot of the jobs that are going to be here in the next century are jobs that don't even exist yet.
Right. Mm-hmm. And will demand a nimble workforce where
right.
they're maybe in totally different fields from one
yep.
job to the next. And to be sure, they're going to have more than one job.
Yes, yes. So it's just an attempt to make education fit the future.
Sure. Did the conference address this, or was this conference more of the hands-on side of it, putting the tools in the teachers' hands?
The keynote was given by Tammy Stevens, who you'll meet on the interview in a bit, and she did a wonderful job of pulling together the philosophy of, you know, the pedagogy, the switch in views here of what we're doing and why we need to do it. Mentioned a couple very good books that explain it quite well. And so, yeah, there's both.
Good.
Is the conference relivable of, you know, in a sense online? Is the stuff, you know, the keynote, the sessions, any of that stuff online anyplace?
Yes, it is. I think Sally has those things included already
okay.
in the notes, right, Sally?
Mm-hmm. That's right. We've got links to the mm-hmm. conference and the wiki that was developed throughout the week. So.
Cool.
Very right, cool. And we even had a partnership with the video production company this year, that so we did get a lot of it on video that you can actually watch. So there's really a very good site if you want to try to catch up and learn some things through the wiki. And MDMC 10 is already up on the wiki for people to take a look at what's coming up next year. And if you sign up now, just a little commercial, we're offering out $199 for the week for people who sign up between now and October. And so if you wait till next May, I think it gets up to, I think, $300. So take a look and see what you think for next year.
So I'd assume you'd highly recommend it, Gail.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be there.
Okay.
It's yeah, it's great. I mean, I was an instructor, but that doesn't mean I didn't learn a lot. You know, you always, and people remarked on that. When you're working with technology and education, there's nobody that knows it all. So the instructors and the students, this year, we noticed a remarkable, from the past 2 years, like the students this year were very, very competent coming in. They had a great deal of knowledge, and skill level was high. So people are doing this thing more and more out there. We're making some progress.
Great. Now, you had a chance to talk with Tammy Stevens of the Stevens Group following the conference. Looks like the week after you Skyped with her.
Well, actually, it was before the conference.
Oh, a week before the conference. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So it was good of her to chat with you. What did you hope to get out of that interview?
Well, I just hope to get people to know a little bit about Tammy, who she is, and what a neat thing she's done for education. She's a very unselfish person with a lot of vision, and at her own initiative and expense in many cases, has tried to move the cause for this type of project-based learning for the next generation into the forefront.
Okay.
And get to know her a little bit, and also get to know how she's doing this through these conferences. And she has some other initiatives she puts out there as well.
Okay. So let's listen to Gail's interview with Tammy Stevens from the Stevens Group.
Hello. I have here with me today the leader of the Stevens Group. Well, actually, Tammy Stevens is in California right now, and I'm here in Wisconsin, but we're together today via Skype. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, Gail. How are you?
I'm doing great. How's the weather out there?
It's a gorgeous day out today.
Okay, Tammy, why don't we begin with you telling us a little bit about your personal and professional background and how the Stevens Group came to be.
Okay. Well, I was a teacher in the Cedarburg School District for about 10 years. And while I was there, I've always had a very strong interest in integrating technology to help students learn. And then while I was teaching, I got my master's in educational technology, and I got that from Cardinal Stritch University. And I guess the evolution to the Stevens Group was just a real gradual, natural one. And I enjoyed working with other teachers and helping them understand how they could integrate technology as well. And in 2000, I founded the Stevens Group, which is a technology integration consulting firm. And that was founded in Wisconsin. And about 18 months ago, I moved to California with my husband for a job that he was taking, and also to finish up my doctorate in educational technology at Pepperdine University.
Okay. And while you were at in the Cedarburg School District here in Wisconsin, I imagine that you met quite a few people there that you were able to connect with and encourage one another about this whole idea of integration in technology. Is that true?
That is true. I actually started out as a substitute in the Library Media Center, and I just love the staff there, and it was definitely something that we did collaboratively, and it just sort of grew organically throughout our building, and then we started sharing with the other elementary schools, and yeah, it was very much a collaborative process, I would say.
Very nice. Sounds exciting. I think, too, when you mentioned the librarian, the whole idea of the librarian today and the role that library media specialist plays has certainly evolved since the time you first began your career there in Cedarburg.
It really has, and I can think of probably no other group in education that's had to adapt and change as dramatically and as quickly as that group has. It really, the whole job and how they have to help students and the skill set that students need in that area is just critical, and it's just exploded really quickly.
And the schools that have some good technology media specialists, whether they're in the library or in the classroom or wherever they might be in the building, are certainly fortunate to have those people to help lead them into the 21st century.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's a lot of research out there that there's an article that I like by Nardi and O'Day where they call those people mediators, and they help mediate between the curriculum and the information technology resources that are now available due to technology and the internet. And I think that whenever you have those types of mediators, the integration can go so much faster.
Definitely agree with that. Right. Well, some of our listeners already know about the event that took place a week or so ago in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Digital Media Conference 2009, and that was held at the Milwaukee Zoo. You and I were both there, Tammy, and so maybe that's a good place to start talking about some of the Stevens Group's efforts in educational technology. How would you define the purpose or goals of that particular conference that we enjoyed?
I think the goal of the Milwaukee Digital Media Conference is to provide a 21st century learning environment for teachers. And I think that to ask educators to design those types of environments when they themselves haven't had a chance to experience them, it's often very different than how they were educated, is sort of unrealistic. So it gives them a chance to see what that would look like and have that modeled for them, and then hopefully to take those ideas back and reflect them in their own classroom situation.
I think that's a great way to put it. I've certainly enjoyed my involvement in this. This is the third time that I was involved in that particular conference, and the first time as an instructor. And I really so much enjoy it, and the thing I think, too, that sets it apart is that it is so hands-on. You don't just hear about these things and then try to create them, but you can, it's easier to pattern your lessons after good lessons when you've actually experienced them, and in the sense of creating them in a hands-on kind of way. So to me, that's a very powerful thing for teachers.
I agree, and I also think that one thing that's unique about our conference is you can take it for graduate credit, but it's repeatable. And I guess part of our philosophy is, technology is always evolving. It's always a moving target. You can't master it all. So what we try to challenge people to do is pick one, possibly two areas that you want to move ahead on, and then, you're welcome to come back and move ahead on other areas in future years, because there is, when you get that many experts together and all that collective expertise, not only of the instructors, but of all of the participants, it can be very, very powerful, and you kind of have to pick and choose what you want to move ahead on.
Right, and I think to me it's kind of like a giant play day. You get to go for 4 days, and you talk to a lot of encouraging and exciting people and learn a lot of new technology and play around with it. There's time to really do some discovering and investigating, and that's where creative ideas for teachers blossom when you get a chance to do that. And we're so busy in our everyday teaching lives that we don't often take the time to do that.
Yeah, I agree. And another thing that's unique about the conference is that there are breakout sessions, but there's also designed within the conference, like you said, collective time where participants work in collaborative groups with one instructor to complete a project. And that time, I think, is critical. It's as important, if not more so, than the breakouts.
Right. And last year, the focus was on one of the top 10 tools, top 10 Web 2.0 tools, which has been on the top of the list for a couple of years now, and that was wikis. So last year we spent a lot of time, and that was actually our final project, was a wiki that involved one of the zoo animals at the Milwaukee Zoo where this was held. Now this year the theme was a little bit similar because we were at the zoo once again, but yet you say you could have taken this class again this year because it was different enough. The tools were different, for one thing. Can you tell us a little bit about what tools we used this year?
Sure. You know, I think of these Web 2.0 tools, some of them, the bigger ones, as almost like portals that hold information. So last year, the wiki was like a portal that held all of the work of the participants. This year, our main portal was VoiceThread, and participants made movies and uploaded them to VoiceThread. What's really powerful about VoiceThread is the social networking aspect of it, and I would say that it's embeddable, too. And so participants can call in or through a mic on their computer. They can comment and give peer feedback, and so that work that they did can expand beyond the walls of the zoo and go much farther across the globe, even to experts in endangered species. So that really changes the whole learning environment to make it real and authentic.
Right. So the product that we all collectively made this year, teachers during the school year, if they went on to Google Maps, they could pull that map of those environment, of those endangered animals up and click on those place markers and show students some little movies about the endangered animals located at those spots in the world. So who knows who will be taking a look and commenting on our movies throughout the year. It'll be interesting to find out.
And it would be exciting if it lived on, if teachers then went and, you know, played that forward and students continued to add endangered, you know, species movies that they made to the world map and added to the advocacy effort of that.
Right. Okay, well, let's move to another question yet. There may be some other things that the Stevens Group is involved with. I know there are. And I'd like you to spend just a couple minutes, Tammy, telling us about some other exciting opportunities that might be available to our folks, especially many of them who are located in the Milwaukee area.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, the Stevens Group is huge into professional development, and our conference next year will be held at the Art Museum, and it's the same dates but different days of the week. It's the 27th through the 30th again, but this time it'll be a Tuesday through a Friday. So that's one area of professional development. But another one is our face-to-face professional development, which Tammy Lind is our director of that division. And she's planning some really exciting things. We have two Saturday sort of mini conferences coming up. And let's see, let me pull up the first one. The first one is February 6th. And the focus of the whole day is differentiation in the 21st century. It'll be held at the Cardinal Stritch campus, and our keynote is Jackie Drummer, and she is a gifted and talented coordinator and differentiation specialist for the School District of South Milwaukee, and that should be very exciting. Participants can get one graduate credit from Cardinal Stritch, and there are a variety of classes. For example, if you want to learn how to teach online with Moodle, that's one of the courses offerings. Emerging Technologies to Assist Struggling Learners are just some of the courses, and that'll be on our website, and you can look at those further.
Sure. We'll put those in our show notes so people can look at them later this year when that time gets a little closer.
Awesome. She also has another Saturday on May 10th, and that one's going to be on mobile technologies in the learning environment, and we'll link that one as well. In addition, the Stevens Group will also do what's called kind of like the Stevens Group Comes to You. And if your school district wants to have a graduate course in educational technology, you can have instructors from the Stevens Group come to your district so that they're learning on the technology that you have, and also it's more convenient for people. And we have a variety of courses ready to go, and we also customize based on what people might want as well. So that's kind of our face-to-face professional development division.
Okay, well, that's great, Tammy. Thanks for sharing those things with us. Those all things all sound like things that could help move us as teachers into the 21st century. And I know I, for one, am greatly looking forward to an experience at the Art Museum next summer.
Great, great. Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. We really appreciate that and wish you and your company much success.
Thanks, Gail. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Gail, thanks for tracking Tammy down. She's certainly insightful about the educational process and especially how technology kind of fits, you know, in that whole environment.
Exactly.
As we mentioned, we'll post all of the MDMC information online as far as, you know, the keynote and the wiki and all those things that'll kind of get you the experience. And as Gail mentioned, signing up early will save you some money, and sounds like a great experience. So thanks, Gail, for giving us the field reporter's experience and also doing the interview with Tammy. That was great.
My pleasure.
All right, moving on to our new technology showcase. We wanted to talk about a couple things that are in the news lately that will or could have an impact on your ministry. One of them is some news coming out of Skype, right, Sally?
That's right, Martin. Skype isn't new technology. It's technology that we've all grown to love in this Web 2.0 world for voice over IP, and that's actually what we're using to record our podcast today, as a matter of fact. But Skype is under a bit of a gun in that they're one of the major components of the Skype software structure, and I'm not real good at explaining the technology behind it. But anyway, there's a lawsuit pending, a licensing issue.
Yeah, the technology behind the VoIP architecture, the back end that essentially makes this all possible is under attack. That was Skype was bought by eBay a long time ago, I think 2 years ago. And now one thing that they didn't buy but were licensed was the VoIP technology, and the original founders of Skype are thinking that they may not relicense the technology that is Skype back to eBay. So that could create a problem if this thing doesn't get resolved, where Skype could go away, or the founders of Skype may reinvent Skype, you know, Franken-Skype of some sort, where they have a competing technology that gets thrown out there. And that's a big deal, because Skype has become the fabric of VoIP technology, and if it goes away, that's a significant impact. I heard somewhere that 8 to 10% of all international calls now are made via Skype.
Mm. Wow, that's a huge percentage, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've talked before about using it in place of your long distance. I have a Skype phone in my kitchen and use it to dial for long distance and everything. I mean, it's definitely been widely adopted, not just by us Wells Techers, but by the world. And so hopefully, you know, other companies are coming to the forefront in this voice over IP technology as well, and some of them can fill a gap if there ends up being a gap.
And my suspicion is I don't think Skype's going away. It wouldn't make sense for this not to somehow work out just because of its use and the user base, you know, of Skype. Just the raw volume would seem to dictate that they'd be able to figure this out somehow. So
Martin,
go ahead, Gail.
So do you think, Martin, if it might not go away, which I certainly hope it doesn't, might we end up paying for it instead of having it go away?
Well, yeah, and I think there's a good paid model there. There's Skype Out and Skype In, both of which we use here in the Wells Tech podcast. There's Skype Voicemail and, you know, all kinds of advertising and those kinds of things. But, yeah, and maybe that is the direction that it's headed. And but there's also some alternatives, too. You know, the problem is, you know, they don't have the acceptance rate that the Skype does. They don't have the viewership. They don't have the usage numbers that Skype does. All the IMs right now offer a voice over IP model. You know, MSN, Google, Yahoo, AIM, they all have a voice component, and they all work pretty well. We've talked about Google Voice in the past. That's in that space. There's also a couple left field ones that are gaining some acceptance. You've maybe seen the commercials on TV for a product called Magic Jack. That's a little dongle you plug into your computer, and you can basically make calls over the internet via your computer. Somebody on the other end has to have the Magic Jack component as well, and that seems to be moving along pretty well. Even, you know, the open source community provides some, you know, VoIP alternatives. Ikiga is one that runs on Linux, and I know there's a Windows beta now. I've tried that in the past. But all of them suffer from the same issue that you have to get, you know, the subscriber rate up. You have to have the install base up for these to be as popular as Skype. And Skype's made it real easy for that to happen. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
I think the other issue that all Web 2.0 tools suffer from is, from my perspective, is that I'm depending on something I have no control over, you know, and you got to put your eggs in a safe basket, but even the seemingly safe basket of Skype at this point is questioned. And so
it's not like Ma Bell where there are governmental regulations. So if one goes down, you know, somebody steps in, we've got our eggs in a little bit shakier basket these days. And that's probably across the board with Web 2.0 technology, right?
Yeah.
Right. I was going to say, I wonder about that, like even wikis. Mm-hmm. You know, if they don't make enough money off those ads, are they going to take all my pages and pages and pages of stuff away?
Better have them backed up, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like the one Flowgram, the one tool that we've talked about that's gone, you know, that was a great tool. Didn't work well with a whole lab at one time, but it was a great tool. I loved it to make my own stuff that I was going to show. And they just weren't making enough money on their paid part of things, which I don't even know what that was because they didn't really have that on their site much.
Right.
So sometimes I do wonder how these companies, you know, make it. Mm-hmm. They have their free component and they're making money somehow, but you don't even always know how that's happening.
Right. The other piece of big news this past week was Microsoft making news with Yahoo. A deal has been inked that is going to essentially merge their search technologies. I think this is a very good thing where we consolidate some of these search engines and use the best, which is, I think, what's going to happen. Bing just came out from Microsoft, and Yahoo's been around forever. Yahoo obviously preceded Google even, but lost market share over time. And but there's still a lot of eyeballs that Yahoo can bring, and I think this is only going to strengthen that relationship. My pick of the week, which I'm going to jump into real quick here, is Good Search. Good Search is a service that is for nonprofits. We've talked about that in the past. They base their technology on Yahoo, so it'll be interesting to see how folks like Good Search survive with this merger and see if there's still that ad or that that payback model that exists with Good Search. Any search you do through Good Search can go to your charity of choice. And anybody not using Good Search, I'd encourage you to think about using it, because you can donate to your charity of choice as long as they get registered. Or in these tough economic times, with the Synod budget getting smaller and smaller, this is a great way to help the Synod out, as every penny counts. We used to get a lot more revenue through Good Search than we are today, so consider going back to Good Search. But I think companies like Good Search will exist and probably only benefit from a better search engine that probably will evolve from this Bing/Yahoo merger.
So let me play devil's advocate here for a minute, Martin. Is it good that Microsoft is getting bigger? I think that's the question. You know, a lot of people are kind of anti-Microsoft and how much they control of our lives.
Yeah, and I think as long as Google's around, I'm not too worried about that.
Yep.
I think Google is really I think Google's the one to be scared of. They have the innovators. They have the they have mindshare at this point. They're the cool company, and Microsoft's viewed as the Goliath that people love to root against. But I think competition's good, and the fact that these search technologies are getting better, that's making the web more manageable, and that's good for ministry, as people are more efficient in their searches and can use it more productively, and in the classroom as well, of course.
Absolutely. I'm just reminded of a comment on our website related to something I said in a few shows ago. I was wrapping up our WizKids summer camp, and I said that I'd polled the kids, and they all kind of voted that they weren't videographers or anything like that, that they were gamers.
Gamers, right.
And we got a cool comment from Jeremy Johnson, who is a software developer and a Wells Tech listener, just kind of talking about how much he learned from gaming growing up and how it motivated him to get into software development. And also, he wrapped it up with how our computers have benefited because of the technology needed to run the newest games and everything. The hardware companies have been pushed to develop faster processors and things like that. So all that competition, what you're talking about, Microsoft versus Google, and the gaming industry pushing the hardware components and things, it's all good.
Makes VoIP possible today, makes the video that we enjoy today on YouTube and those kinds of things all possible. So, yep, I think so. All right. Well, I kind of jumped the gun on a pick of the week. I picked Good Search, and I would encourage people to take a look at that and designate the Synod as your beneficiary. Gail, you have a pick this week?
I do. I decided, following up on your conversation here, I'm going to take my pick of the week. I'm going to stick with VoiceThread.com. I talked about VoiceThread as part of our project. And as we were talking here about, I think this, even if teachers looked at it once before and didn't do anything with it, it's worth another look. It's a very stable company. We actually had a Skype call up on the big screen with the developer and the owner of the company, who spoke with us during the conference last week. And very cool guy and very visionary, imaginative guy, but also they have the good business component. They have several levels. There's free VoiceThread, and then for $10 forever, you can buy yourself the ability to make groups and control groups, and $60 you get a little more. You can do real privatized, so you're nobody your room sees their own stuff, that kind of thing. So you can get real secure if that's your goal. This is one that's not going away, very stable, making money, growing like crazy, and a safe bet. So I'm going to use that as my pick and encourage people to really investigate that. There's tons of stuff you can do with that in the classroom.
I'd love to see us pull together a list of all the projects. Maybe some of our listeners will share their VoiceThread projects that they do in the coming school year.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks, Gail. Sally, you have a pick, I assume?
I sure do. I'm going to talk about teaching your kids to be gamers.
Do you have to teach them?
This is actually a pick I've probably talked about a long time ago on the show, but I wanted to bring it back to the forefront, and that's Scratch, which is a programming language that was developed at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and it is wonderful to teach kids the basics of computer programming. So if they have that inclination to be interested in software development, have a vision of a game they want to create, Scratch is the platform to do it on. And the reason that I wanted to bring it up today is because I've just recently come across a lot of Scratch resources. As teachers begin to use Scratch more and more, they're putting together wikis and other resources on the web, and I wanted to include links to Scratch Ed, Scratch Workshop, Learn Scratch, and even a link to our St. John's Scratch projects that we've done here in our school. So it'll give you an idea of what some of the kids did even this summer in our computer club that we had going. So lots of fun projects you can do with your kids, and a really excellent intuitive way for them to get introduced to computer programming.
Sally, is that the one that Scratch is offering a free CD right now to teach teachers how to use Skype or Scratch? Is that your Scratch Ed? Is that where that's located,
yes,
maybe?
Absolutely. Okay. It's on that Scratch Ed because that's also from MIT.
Mm-hmm. All right, because I'm looking to get the CD and really work at that so I know how to work that program. I looked at it once. I didn't think it was all that intuitive for me.
Well, you'll be surprised if you spend a little time with it. It's kind of like building Legos. So if you can build Legos, you can actually program
with
Scratch. All the components snap together like little Lego pieces. And
it's one of those the kids can show me how to work.
That's right. They certainly can. That's the way it works here in Sleepy Eye.
Yep.
Good encouragement there. We've read over and over the past 10 years we're going to continue to have a shortage of computer science majors, certainly as compared to other countries, India and China in particular. So this would be a good way to get people interested in computers, and not just on the user side, you know, the gamer side, but the creation thereof, and just getting getting some folks into that industry. So it's definitely an industry that could use some young Christians involved. So that's a great start, right?
That's right.
We are going, this would be the point in the show where we normally have community feedback, and boy, do we have community feedback this week. We had a lot going on, and one of the reasons is we pre-recorded a show, and now we've almost got 2 weeks of community feedback, and we're actually going to hold off one more week and continue to collect community feedback. And next week's show will be a feedback show. We're going to just talk about everything that you're talking about, comment on it, share information with you, because our listeners really bring some good stuff to the table here. So we're going to have some fun with community feedback next week. And we would love for you to participate in that by giving us your feedback if you haven't done so already on any show or different things that you'd like us to talk about. How do they get in touch with us, Sally?
Boy, we've got all kinds of channels for that. We'd love to hear your voice, and you can do that by calling our voicemail line at 414-375-2334 and leaving us a message, and we can include you in the next Wells Tech mm-hmm. podcast. Alternatively, you can go to our show notes website at wellstech.wells.net. Leave us a comment there. Find links to other ways to participate, including our email address, wellstech@wells.net, our Facebook fan page. We have a brand new URL for that.
Yeehaw!
That's right. We reached 100, and we got our special URL, facebook.com/wellstech. So visit our fan page. We have a Wells Tech listserv. We're on Twitter. It's all on our Wells Tech website, so check it out.
Very good. And we are continuing our bonus Wells Tech goodness show for next week, and we'll be looking at forms creation. There's some cool tools out there from Google and others that will make your form creation lives a lot easier. Everybody wants to do forms these days, with good reason. It really does save some time, and people want to do some registering and participating online, and forms are a great way to do that. So that episode will be released on Monday morning. That's going to about do it. Thank you, Gail. Thank you, Sally. Wonderful job as usual. Appreciate your time, talents, and everything else you bring to the table. Let's close the show with the music of Wendy Sue Fleege, her song Time from her album Everyday Christian. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
things to do today. How can she get it all accomplished with him running underfoot? He's tugging on her sleeve, something to say. She heaves a sigh and thinks, boy, this better be good. With tears in his voice, he gives her a choice. Can you make a little time for me? Mom, please play with me a while. You have no idea how much it means to me to feel your love and make you smile. For so long, it's so rare that he and his wife speak. Tonight she's waiting at the door, and he's wondering what's wrong. With tears in her voice, she gives him a choice. Can you make a little time for me?
But
take you.